The following is brought to you by the Social Suplex Podcast Network.
This is John Silver, lead recruiter of the Dark Order, and you are listening to All Things Elite.
Welcome to the 178th episode of Social Suplex's podcast about AEW with a proclivity for positivity. Welcome to All Things Elite. My name is Austin Sumlitz, and I am the host of this lovely show. And joining with me, as always, is my good buddy and friend Floyd Johnson Jr. My man, how is you doing?
Okay, so let me tell you how I'm doing. So I got a treadmill for Christmas. I've talked about it. I've posted about it. So I did my first workout yesterday on Monday, and like I said, I posted it on my at Floyd Johnson Jr. Twitter, that CM Punk beat up post. Yes, you don't know how out of shape you are until you try to do something actual physical. Like, and after I got on, and I'm not going to even tell the numbers because I'm embarrassed by them, but I did my 30 minutes on the treadmill at a incredibly not fast speed because I felt like I was exhausted, and all I could think is like, good Lord, it really did get this bad. So I worked out, but I did work out. I did use my treadmill, got a good sweat in. Some people say they feel good after a workout. I just felt tired, but I imagine this is, you know, getting on the horse. And then last night I decided to start Weight Watchers, and I started that today, and I'm going to count points and all that stuff. It's the only diet I've ever had any success on is Weight Watchers, you know, counting points and shit.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to do that. And yeah, so how am I doing? I am tired. I am hungry. And, you know, I ate too many cupcakes in through my life, so that's where I'm at. I'm looking forward to this journey, and I will talk about it on the show as I move forward. I'm not going to give like a lot of updates because I have this dream or goal or whatever where I don't like, I work out and stuff, and I have my few workout groups that I'll talk to, but I'm not going to post it on the big social media. So when I show up to like Revolution or Double or Nothing, people look at me like, what the fuck happened to you? Because that has happened to me in my life, and it's such a good feeling. Such an awesome feeling. Like, because if you, you know, when you're watching online and you see you're gradually losing, you know, you get used to it. But when you like, you're like 300 pounds and you show up somewhere 250, dude, it's like, oh,
there you go.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm not going to like post a lot about it, but I am going to be working out. I'm going to be on Weight Watchers, watching what I eat. Because, yeah, my big motivation was our friend Corey. His dad had a heart attack, right? And then he gotten vegan, gotten great shape. Dude's in, like, excellent shape. Like, he's shaved 10 years off of his life, right? And I was like, man, you know, that's really awesome. But I had this thought process. Why do you have to wait until you have your first heart attack to get your life together? So, I'm trying to avoid my first heart attack. So, I'm getting my life together now. So, that should be fun. Like I said, you will hear my journey. I will not overly talk about it. This is probably the longest I'm going to ever talk about it as I get you prepared for it in the history. But, yeah, I'm looking forward to this. I mean, I'm not ready. But I am ready. You know what I mean? Because I feel like if I don't start now, I'm literally never going to start.
Yeah, and man, dude, I'm excited for you. I'm proud of you, and I am excited to hear how things continue on your journey. And as somebody who runs and likes running, and I started doing it about, I want to say like a year and a half, 2 years ago, and it is a bitch when you start. It is a bitch, but then it's like it's so crazy how much like every single run you do, like stuff automatically, like you're like, okay, where you kind of the climb to as you improve your ability to run and your the way you control your breathing and all that kind of stuff. So I'm excited to see how your journey goes for sure, and I'll definitely keep posted with how that goes for you. But yeah, we have got a lot to talk about. A busy week last week to start off the new era of AEW in 2023. With the new look of AEW Dynamite, as well as we had Battle of the Belts 4 that took five, actually, my apologies, Battle of the Belts 5 that took place a few nights ago. We're going to get into all of that, but before we get into everything, I want you guys to make sure you are downloading this fine show on Google or Apple Podcasts. If you listen to us on Spotify or wherever you choose to listen to us, give us a share with your friends, family, coworkers, whoever you wish. You can leave a rating and a review, and you can also support us by following us on social media. We are at AT Elite Pod on Twitter, at Social Suplex are the guys that make this show possible, so please check out all the other shows they have on their network. I am at Austin Sumowicz, S-Z-U-M-O-W-I-C-Z. Floyd is at Floyd Johnson Jr. on Twitter, and the big news of the week that we were going to talk about was about the AEW presence that was taking place at Wrestle Kingdom, which was a real fun show, and Wrestle Kingdom's always come through with their level of just like grandeur and how huge they feel and the stuff that we saw. Not a good night for your boys in FTR. I apologize for that.
The crowd could cheer, which was big. They have been doing clap crowds for about 2 years in Japan, and at Wrestle Kingdom, the crowds were allowed to cheer. So people got to come out and hear the crowd for the first time in a while. Like, really hear the crowd, like, whooping and hooting and hollering and woo and all that kind of stuff. So I was very happy for them. And FTR came out, and our friend from Social Suplex, James, was in the building. And, you know, and Issa, good friend Issa, who's been on the show, is in the building. And, you know, and the crowd was loud for FTR, and they really liked FTR. So, man, for me, like, to me, it's like, of course, I want my team to win every time, you know what I mean? But I don't want them to win every time, because if FTR won every time, it wouldn't make a good story. It'd be kind of boring. So now, right, FTR is on something they haven't been on in a very long time, and that's called a losing streak.
It is.
Like I saw, you know, they lost to the Acclaimed, you know, then they lost the for the AEW titles, right? Then they lost the, I'm trying to remember the exact order. They lost the ROH titles to the Briscoes at the next show. Then they lost to the Guns. Then they lost the AAA titles. Then they lost the New Japan titles. So I was like looking, and they haven't lost five matches in a row since they were in the WWE doing house shows. They just don't lose five matches.
They don't really, yeah.
They don't lose five matches in a row. So, yeah. So now, as all of our fans, or all the other FTR fans are looking forward to, we're looking forward to them on the comeback. On the come up. We're looking forward to them, you know, doing this again and coming back. And it's going to be fun when that happens. And I don't know where the story is going to go, if they're going to be champions or not. But I do know, you know, that they're not going to keep losing.
Yeah, I would hope so. Yeah. And of course, the match that everyone was talking about was Kenny Omega and Will Ospreay, already a 6-star classic in the eyes of Dave Meltzer. And it was an unreal match. Just absolute stellar fucking work.
He went 6.25 on a 5 scale, and I honestly thought he went too low. That is how impressed by this match I was. It was just, it was like, the great thing about, like, one of my favorite matches of all time is WrestleMania 12, Shawn versus Bret in the Iron Man match. And I think if you take two wrestlers that are coming into wrestling school and you work with them and train them and they go over each spot, I think they could replicate that match to a certain point where, you know, they would look good replicating that match. Kenny Omega and Will Ospreay, you can't replicate that.
It's impossible.
They're two of six people in the world that can maybe do that match. The amount of athleticism, endurance, you know, the physicalness that the physicality that went into it. Not many people can replicate what they did. And honestly, I would recommend they didn't even try.
Right.
Because these dudes are so gifted of athletes that they are on another level. Like this isn't paint by numbers. This is the most beautiful painting you've ever seen. And when I watched this match, in awe, jaw dropped. Because you know what? I was like, man, this might have been one of the best matches I ever seen in my life. And then I get a report later that they held something back for later. And I'm like, what the fuck did they hold back?
How can you? Again, I was like, how can you hold anything back from that match?
Yeah, like, what? Come on. That was just like, that was the most mind-blowing thing to me. The match was mind-blowing, but the most mind-blowing thing is they think they can do better. And that is why they are on another level. And it's just like, there's this elite tier that is like Will Ospreay, Kenny Omega, Kazuchika Okada, and Pac that live on. I'm just talking about the performance level of wrestling in the ring. I'm not talking about promos, entrances, anything. But in between those ropes, those men are untouchable. They are godlike. And yeah, I tip my hat to how amazing that match was. And yeah, no. Kenny Omega won. Kenny Omega won.
He did.
So he repped. He repped for the AEW. So, yeah.
Yeah. And also, shout out Mercedes Moné. Huge. Huge. Just fucking huge moment. Super excited about that.
Yeah. Her coming in. The move. Yeah, she did a move.
And I get it. Yeah, no, I know. And no, people are going... No.
It was a complicated move. It wasn't like, oh, I'm going to come do a snapmare. She was trying to turn a Gordy bomb into, like, you know.
DDT,
into a DDT. That's difficult. That was a high level of difficulty, and I'm pretty sure, you know, I don't know if she practiced it or whatever. Didn't come off right. But I don't think it took away from the moment. Because you know, her showing up anywhere else is the moment, you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and that was it, and it was crazy. She challenged her to a match in San Jose, Kyrie, and it sold out. So,
needle mover.
Mission accomplished. That was the goal, and that mission was accomplished.
Absolutely. But we'll move over now from Wrestle Kingdom to AEW Dynamite, the first Dynamite of 2023 with a brand new look and a brand new set and all that kind of stuff. Before we even get into the card itself, I want to say, what are your thoughts on the new look of AEW Dynamite?
It looks brighter. It looks more WWE-ish, which is good because you're, you know, trying to look the best you can. Mm-hmm. So I see nothing wrong with that. I knew it was going to have to change eventually, but yeah, it kind of hurts my soul.
Everyone was so used to the little like railing in the middle and then the actual old school WCW tunnels and stuff like that, the heel tunnel and the face tunnel.
Yeah.
They still are technically following with heels and faces coming out on opposite sides.
Yeah. Yeah. I saw that. And, I was looking for that. And like I said, you're going to have to evolve or you're going to die. You know what I mean? That's just how business works. That's how life works. You either pushing forward or you're falling behind. It was time for AEW to change, but, you know, it was funny because I considered that first era part of the, you know, because they had that the middle chandelier, and it was basically there for Cody's entrance. You know what I mean? So it's like the Cody era is kind of officially over. All signs of Cody have been gone, and, you know, makes me say it.
Yeah, it's a bit of a bummer, so, yeah. But... But regardless, he'll be tearing it up when he enters the Rumble. I do like the stage as well. I'd like the prepackaged stuff they put in the intro. I think it looks really cool. Though at the same time, part of me misses like the explosion of color in the intro that they would always show. Mostly just because it makes me remember Hangman's AEW Dynamite from Home intro from Being the Elite, where they had explosions of color around him, like making coffee and doing shit in the house. I don't know why. I just always remember that, and it makes me smile. Yeah,
BTE is always good, right? But I thought during the pandemic, it was like what we needed every Monday.
It really was.
It was like we needed it.
Being the Elite's always great when they don't show fuck CM Punk chance.
That is a thing that happened.
I'm petty. I'm sorry. I'll move on.
All right.
We opened up the show of the first Dynamite of the new year with Absolute Ricky Starks versus the Ocho Chris Jericho, who has not been on a great run as of late because Jericho is still definitely dealing with the aftermath of Action Andretti, but he got his revenge after he burned him in the face. Ricky Starks, stellar showing for Ricky Starks, I will say. Especially, I would say, the moment of hit, like they had some really great selling points and storytelling moments in this that the crowd really, really bought into. Especially the part that I loved was when Jericho was able to like the Rochambeau was about to be hit by Ricky Starks, but he flips it immediately into the walls and turns him over. And while the ref's back is turned because of Angelo Parker, Matt Menard takes Floyd the bat and smacks Ricky in the face with it. Ricky's out. Aubrey, who was getting huge chance as well, I will say, with it being the Seattle crowd. Aubrey goes to lift the arms and stuff like that. The best part was on that third raise of the arm, Ricky's hand hits but then pops immediately back up. And the pop was really, really good. And he fights his way back in, and he manages to get back in there with a spear. And wins the match after that, after he's able to knock down the Jericho Appreciation Society members. And he gets the win with the spear until the JAS sprint from the back and they start beating up on Ricky. Action Andretti then runs down, his eyes still burnt from the fireball, and he gets a steel chair and cleans house. Up until Anna JAS and Ty Conti come up, or Ty Mello, sorry. And Anna pulls the chair away, and then Action Andretti gets hit by Tay with a low blow. And then that's when the JAS continue to jump on him. But then Jake Hager viciously powerbombs Ricky through a table off of the apron and onto the floor. And Excalibur's being like, look, they can push this all they want. Jericho's lost two in a row, which people were like, that's a big deal. But Jericho's still making sure the JAS gets the last laugh. This was a hell of an opener, I would say. They did a really good job with this match. And Jericho, like that selling, like sports entertainer style, like of really pushing those moments of like smaller moments in the match to get the crowd engaged. He does that really well. And Ricky does it well as like too. He worked off of that great. And this was a match that like the crowd was eating every little bit of it because they were like popping at the right moment. It was a hot crowd and a match that they were really playing off of that as well. And yeah, I thought this was a hell of an opener.
Ricky Starks is a great, great, great heel. But he might be a next level face.
Legit.
Like, he might be the face that you can build your company around because he just knows how to garner sympathy on a level that I don't think most wrestlers do. You're like, most times you just would, you know, a lot of people just get sick of the baby face, trying to make you feel or whatever. And it's just like, man, it is. Well, the way he does it is like especially like when he was going out and his hand hit the, like that little touch of letting his hand hit the mat. He was out, but he came back. You know, he made everyone think that the match was over, and then he came back, and it was such a classic moment, and just that match was just two professional wrestlers. I mean, Jericho, like, I mean, all the people that, you know, have their false narratives that AEW is just there to put Jericho over, I'm like, this dude puts people over all the time, but mm-hmm. he waits for the right moments to put people over. He's just not going to lose every match. He waits for the right moment to make the people that he has look good. In this case, Ricky needed a win after that loss to MJF. He needed a big win to establish that he's going to be in the main event picture. There is no bigger win than pinning Chris Jericho in the middle of the ring. He did it. But, you know, of course, you got to keep the JAS tough. Like, you can't just, you know. So the JAS had to get better of him in the end. Very excellent segment. Just really enjoyed it.
Yeah. And we then moved over to an in-ring interview with Tony Schiavone and Hangman Adam Page. Hangman basically said how he's not medically cleared as of today. And he's been told that if he came out tonight or Friday and got into a fight with John, it would set things back. And he doesn't want that. But what he wants is the same thing that John wants, which is to be at the Forum next week and beat him. And he said, look, I have a brain scan scheduled, and if it comes back good, I'll be good for the Forum. And he said he's going to knock his dick in the dirt. And hell of a line. Moxley comes out, and then, technical issues. We at home could hear Moxley completely fine. The crowd could not. We can't hear you, Chance, we're going, as the mic was like coming through for television, but not the arena. It started going through a little bit, and then it stopped. Multiple F-bombs from Moxley, who was getting very annoyed. And then there was a little Go Seahawks thing he mentioned when they finally got it working. And as a Lions fan who didn't make the playoffs because of the Seahawks, no. No. Also, you're welcome, because we killed Aaron Rodgers for you. basically, then Moxley is finally able to get going into his promo. And his response to Hangman being like, I'm tired of these flowers, sympathy cards, an ongoing candlelight vigil for Hangman. He's like, I've been knocked out of this business more than anybody else. He said, you playing the victim because you got knocked out. This is cowboy shit. It makes me absolutely sick. And Paige is like, you think I'm mad because you knocked me out? I've been knocked out before. And it's the unfortunate part of what we do. But what I'm angry is how you called me out here. You didn't let me get a word out before you made a joke. You nearly took my career and you cracked a joke. And it's in that moment that you felt threatened. And he said, the first thing Moxley would do if he got knocked out is come back for revenge. And he's had a month to stew on it. And when you said that to me, 2 months I stewed on it and you knocked me out with a lariat. And I've had two in the chamber with your name on them. And you get them at the Forum. And Moxley said, your punk ass doesn't belong in the ring with me, and next time I'm going to make sure you don't get back up. Segment was good, minus the technical issues, which was a bit of a bummer, and obviously threw off Moxley a bit because it was really annoying him, and you could tell. But I liked the use of the lariat to tie it back into the Forum match, and I'm excited for how it goes, how we're going to get basically this match, but hopefully no freak injuries. We don't need that. We don't need that. And I'm excited to see like kind of like this match in a proper form. Cause like I said, they were on fire before that freak injury. So, definitely a shame with the technical issues, but segment was still pretty solid.
Okay. That was my headset. Really great segment. Two tough guys talking tough, building a match. It's like, it got me super excited for this match. I don't know how it's going to go. I don't know who's going to win, but I'm rooting for Hangman, which I haven't rooted for Hangman in a very long time, but I am rooting for him to hit that flip lariat at some point. You know, that would be awesome.
All right. AEW World Tag Team Championship match between the Acclaimed and Jay Lethal and Jeff Jarrett. Shout out to Max Caster continuing to just drive the wedge with Jeff Jarrett's wife, not letting it go. And this was a good match, I thought. These guys, the way they ejected Billy Gunn, I thought was amazing. It was an outstanding way to get him out of there. The way that this was also cool too, because I liked how this match, with the kind of wonky finish that they had, the hometown girl, Aubrey Edwards, come in and save it. And everyone was going fucking banana when that happened. Basically what happened was, Satnam Singh comes in, throws Max into the steps. They eject him, and then they get multiple refs out to get rid of Satnam Singh and Sanjay Dutt. However, then Lethal was able to get a pin after hitting a ripcord elbow, and he pins Anthony Bowens. His foot is on the rope. Ref doesn't see it as Sanjay pushes it off of the rope. Aubrey then alerts it, and they restart the match, and then that's when Bowens was able to get a nice reversal, and the Acclaim were able to retain their AEW Tag Team Championships. This was fine. I thought this was a good match. I didn't think it was anything outstanding, but I thought it was good. The Acclaim got the win. They're hot, still hot as ever, and I liked how they used Aubrey. I thought that was a lot of fun.
Yes, I completely agree. The Aubrey thing, how they set it up was beautifully done. So without the Satnam Singh situation, there's no reason for the second ref to be at the ring, right?
Yeah.
So Satnam's doing it, and then all the refs come out there, and it sets up this moment beautifully. And it's just like, it's one of the subtle ways. It's like, I'll tell anybody, stuff like this is why I like wrestling, like why I love wrestling, why I think it's one of the perfect art forms. You had to think ahead. This led to this, that led to this, that led to this false finish, this dusty finish, where you literally thought Jeff Jarrett and Jay Lethal were your new AEW Tag Team Champions. A day I would have, I hated for the rest of my existence as a person that just likes real tag teams. But yeah, you had this legit moment where you thought you had a title win, and then the star of the moment gets to be Seattle's very own Aubrey Edwards. Come on. I'm like, they found a way to give a ref a spot in her hometown. I try not to bring the E up very much, but literally the thing is, you get beat up in your hometown. They got the ref over in the hometown. They gave her the shine point in her hometown during their tag team match. How awesome is that? Who thinks to do that?
Yeah, no, it was such a cool thing, and it made me smile, definitely. There was a sit-down interview afterwards with Jamie Hayter and Dr. Britt Baker, and Hayter was talking about how Saraya doesn't get it because we're homegrown talent, and Britt Baker would talk a lot of this too, how we worked our way to the top of this division. Hayter is the champion. I'm the boss. She's the killer. I'm the pillar. Saraya doesn't realize that last week she had two of the best female wrestlers in the world next to her. She had Sheeta and Storm next to her. How has she not picked her partner for our match yet? Like, I don't understand how she couldn't have an idea of who is going to be on her side. Then we had a little bit of a thing backstage where we got an announcement about how next week on Dynamite, Jack Perry challenged Lee Moriarty and Big Bill to a match. And then his backup was the FTW champion Hook. So we get Jungle Hook as a team, which I'm very excited for, because I want more Hook on my television screen. And then do you want to move just right now to Bryan Danielson, another hometown boy for Seattle,
yes,
facing off against Tony Nese, which this was a good option. This was a good match, I thought. This was a good match, did what it needed to do, because it then led to the segment that happened afterwards. Tony Nese came out and basically cracked him immediately and nearly, like, he was like, he hit a running knee on him, basically just tried to, like, quickly steal a win, but didn't happen. Tony Nese was able to get the win Danielson was able to get the win on Nese with the lapel lock, sorry. And then Danielson said he's ready for another fight and called out MJF. And MJF proceeds to be like, I'm not going to come in that ring and wrestle because I don't get my rocks off for putting my body on the line to entertain these schmucks. You're a mark. I get a big fat check in the mail whether I wrestle or not. I'm a special attraction. Just because you look like a goat doesn't mean you're the greatest of all time. And you, if you think you're the best wrestler in the world, it's impossible because my belt proves it. Who died and made you the king of wrestling? Journalists who have never been in this ring and have – or these marks that don't have an athletic bone in their parasitic bodies. And then he goes about how he's touted as being one of the best wrestlers in the world. And people who have actually been in this business have said this. Top guys like Disco Inferno, Eric Bischoff, and the smartest man of them all, and my number one fan, Jim Cornette. It's that simple. You want to be a heel, just say Jim Cornette does anything good. It's just that simple.
Dude, it was... So like, it was so like in your face and on purpose. Like I want to be booed, but it still worked. Like it was like pandering for boos, but it still worked. You know, it's like he had that crowd in a frenzy because he had mentioned the name. He dared mention the name of Jim Cornette in their presence.
So, yeah, you don't say that name in AEW country. You don't say that.
No, dude, saying Jim Cornette's name or that, like, man, you could be like, I like Jim Cornette's shirt. That'll turn you heel. Like, you can't say anything positive about that man. You'd be like, man, Jim Cornette told me about this diner in Kentucky and it was delicious. What the dude? Like, what are you doing? Jim Cornette has never done anything right. Jim Cornette is the devil in this fan base. So, don't say anything good about Cornette. MJF flipped it, and he's like, don't be shocked if that's not the last time you hear that name.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Also, there was a moment in the promo, too, where MJF made a joke about how his mommy Brian, like, on how he... basically implying his mom is a slut. And then MJF was like, I think your mom has encountered many suitors and they could probably fill this entire arena. Raise your hand if you're a suitor for Max's mom. And everyone's raising their hand. And I was just like, Danielson's out here doing your mom jokes. And it's like so stupid, but I love it. And Danielson tries to get him to fight. And MJF's like, no. You want a shot at the king and the number one prize? You have to be number one contender. This is where wins and losses matter. So listen, you have to win every match from now until February 8th. You'll become the number one contender. And if you win that, I'll give you a match at Revolution. And Danielson's like, no, I'm just going to come out here, wrestle when I want, and become the number one contender that way. And he's like, no, I run this company, not Tony Khan, not the EVPs. It's my way or no way. And he's like, look, I'll agree to your cute little stipulation if you let me make the stipulation for our match at Revolution. And he's like, pick whatever you want, moron. And he said, you won't be able to do anything to get yourself DQ'd. This is the real test to see if you're a professional wrestler. It's a one-hour Iron Man match. And he said, you're on. I'm not worried because you're not even going to make it past week one because you're a choke artist. And he said, Danielson's response was, from once I get to being through every single opponent you put through in front of me and run through them, I'm going to expose you. I'm going to expose that you don't have the cardio, the footwork. You don't put in the work to come out here every single week and wrestle. And after I expose you, I'm going to put you in the coffin and kick your head in. This segment was awesome. Absolutely, absolutely awesome. And I loved it. I loved it. I loved it. I loved it.
Brian Danielson, I will say one thing he's best at is cutting a promo without it seeming like he's cutting a promo.
Yes.
It just seemed like he was talking to MJF. Like, using plain language, I'm going to beat you up. You know, like, everybody can understand. This is not, he didn't say in that squared circle or use any wrestling jargon. He just talked to him like he's a normal person and is like, I'm going to beat you up. But not because this or that, it's because I am a better wrestler than you. I am an elite wrestler. You're not on my level. It was like he even kind of admonished himself for getting caught up in the mom jokes. He's like, no, that's, you know, I'm better than that kind of thing. And It's just like, it's such a plain way of speaking. And it's like, I'm not threatening you. This, everything I'm saying is a fact. Mm-hmm. It's like, I don't believe it. I know it. You can't hang with me. And it's a beautiful, mm-hmm. it's a beautiful way to catch a promo. Cause like, you know, Jon Moxley, love him. He always sounds like he's cutting a promo. Like, he could just be ordering at a Waffle House, and he's going to sound like he's cutting a promo. And he's great at it. He's amazing at it. MJF, of course, promo artist. But Bryan Danielson is the promo-less promo. You know what I mean? It just mm-hmm. doesn't sound like he's like, I'm going to come grab you and break your neck. It's like, I'm just going to beat you up. And it's almost like it's surgical, like it's nothing to him. He's almost like a serial killer. Talking about he's almost like that when he's talking about beating people up.
Yeah, no question about it. And he's so good at it too. He's so good at it. Real quickly, we had a match between Swerve Strickland and AR Fox. Really solid match. Love that we get to see Swerve doing his heel stuff. Afterwards, they had Parker Boudreau give a foreign object while the ref was distracted to Swerve. He used it, knocked out Fox with a vicious Death Valley driver on the apron. Huge, like, move right there. He rolls him back in the ring and hits the double stomp and then pins him. Again, I love Swerve as a heel. I'm not sure about Mogul Industries. I'm not sure. There's got to be a lot of prove it for me for those guys to make me believe that this whole thing is worth it, but Swerve's got my whole support.
Let me tell you, these dudes could not know how to wrestle worth a crap, right? But they look intimidating. They look like two rappers' bodyguards, right? They look like mm-hmm. a rapper's bodyguard, and that's their job. It's like Parker Boudreau is this big son of a biscuit, and then this dude's got other dudes got tattoos over his face. Doesn't even have a name. He's just gonna murder you, and it's just like. Like I said, I buy it. I buy it. I buy the gimmick. You know what I mean? Swerve is the star. These two are the muscle. You know, they're not there to win tag team titles. They're not where to... No, they're there to, if you can't mess with Swerve or Swerve says attack you, to attack you. And, you know, ain't nothing... You know, what makes a great heel is having great goons. So, he is gooned up right now. And I think, you know, it can end up taking him to the next level.
Yeah, I mean, it could be really, really good stuff for sure.
But if they ever have to actually wrestle, that might be...
Then that could be it.
That might be where we run into it.
That's where things hit a wall. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, so as long as they're just jumping people and all that kind of stuff. I mean, Parker's actually decent. He's fine. I've seen him on The Dark, and I've seen him in matches. He's fine. The other guy is the unknown quantity in this situation. So unknown commodity. So we will see where it goes from here.
Yep. We then had Saraya backstage with Toni Storm and Hikaru Shida. And Saraya was talking about how since she came to AEW, she learned that AEW has the best female roster in the world. And she's sitting next to the best wrestler in the world. So that means, pause for effect, Toni, you're going to be my partner against Jamie and Britt. And Shida not happy, and I wasn't either. How the fuck are you picking Toni Storm over Hikaru Shida? I'm genuinely asking. Like, I get it.
I mean,
world champion
Toni Storm beat Hikaru Shida the last time they wrestled, right?
That may be the case.
So that means she kind of proved that she's the better wrestler, right?
With one win, does that automatically prove that you're better?
She's better than Shida.
She was better on that night.
Yeah. That's all she has. 1-0. That's all you got.
I refuse to believe that Shida is not, like, Shida's best. Shida's best.
I feel like we might be about to get heel Shida, and I'm excited.
I'm excited for heel Shida, but I love her. That's the thing. I love her. And I think
you know what? And you can keep cheering for her. She's just going to do, like, it's like Athena, right? I will use her as an example. Ember Moon, I never got. Ever. Mm-hmm. Never got her. I people were like, I was like, she had a really good move, and it's one of the best moves in wrestling. Don't get me wrong. I loved it. I love that move, right? The mm-hmm. old face, the eclipse, whatever you're calling it, right?
Yeah, the eclipse.
Yeah. So, But when she just got pissed off and started beating people up, oh my God, am I an Athena fan now? I am all about Athena. I'm like, dude, she just punches people in the face. That's my kind of wrestling. Like, yeah. She right. Like, she taps you out and then kicks you in the face after the match. Why? Because you took too long to tap out. I love it. I know. And that's what I'm like. I feel like there is an edge and aggression that another level that Sheeta can bring to her presentation that I think, like, while we love her, because I think she's an amazing wrestler, we could love her more.
We could. We very much could. I would be down for Sheeta going, like, scorched earth.
Yes.
Then we had the Guns having a eulogy for FTR. And it was, you had, like, FTRIP on the screen, which was a funny, I love that, honestly. And Austin goes how they're going to pay respects to FTR's legacy. And Colton was like, I'm going to try to get through this. Be patient with me. They had a hell of a year. They worked a bunch of promotions. They called themselves 7-star FTR, but they were 10 stars in our hearts. And how they were champions in all those companies, not AEW. And then Austin Gunn would had them stand up and give a silence, a moment of silence for FTR. Crowd was not even doing it. FTR's music hit, and everyone was like, are they here? They were just in Japan. And nope, they were not. And the Guns laughed at the crowd, making them believe, like, oh, you should have seen the look on your faces. FTR will never work in AEW again. We are the new living legends. Top Guns out. And you can't say that because that is a movie and you're going to get sued. You are going to get sued for saying that. This was funny. I like this. I thought this was one of the better segments the Guns have had. And they really owned it, and I thought they did a really good job. I wasn't a huge fan of the fake out with FTR, R's music. We've seen it done a lot, and honestly, it could have been done better, I felt like. But everything else,
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Thought was stellar, like their whole like get up and them being so somber and holding back tears, I thought was really funny. Oh, you there?
Yeah, I had you on mute. I thought it was excellent. You know, you might not think I do, but yeah, I thought it was like hilarious. I was all about this segment. Just like it's one of those things when you have somebody and you've been developing them for a while. At some point, you just got to get off the pot. And it's like the Guns, you know, you can make them, you know, you can make them as far, especially being in a feud with FTR. That first match, they definitely left, you know, a lot on the table. I even said it. It was just like, it was a match, nothing to write home about. You know, it wasn't.
No,
I wouldn't even say it was bad. I wouldn't say it was good. It was there. So
right.
When you coming down to it, it's like, so you need to build to a better match. And this is obviously building to a better match because anytime, like almost 99% of the time, they say someone's not going to work there again.
Right.
They're definitely going to work there again. So I'm looking forward to this. I mean, I think Austin has an amazing charisma. And I think Colton just looks like $1 million. So those two things combined, you know, they are a formidable tag team. So I'm looking forward to what they're going to bring. And if, you know, FTR can bring them up to the next level. Because that's what, I mean, that's what FTR's job is. Even if they win the feud, their job is to elevate the Guns in this situation.
Yeah, no question about it. No question about it. But we then moved on to the TBS champion, Jade Cargill and Red Velvet, facing off against Kira Hogan and Sky Blue. I mean, this was kind of there. This was trying to push more of the baddies kind of falling apart. Jade was not happy after at Red Velvet during the match. She came in and was beating up at Kira Hogan, and then Jade – yelled at Red Velvet and tagged her in, basically tapping her on the head. Kira Hogan then was trying to go after Red Velvet. Cargill tagged back in, kicked a lot of people, and then basically at one point she tried to tag Red Velvet, and she turned away, but Jade still won the match. I don't know, man. This didn't work for me. I thought it was very odd because, again, like, you know, there was disrespect for sure from both sides and everything like that. But, like, Jade, like, oh, Red Velvet turned her back on you and stuff like that, but you still won the match handily. I'm like, okay, I guess, you know, the baddie's falling apart. I think there is a better way that they could have done this, but, of course, they don't want Jade to lose yet. But I don't know. I didn't like this too much, honestly.
Well, Jade, yeah, it was very confusing. Because, I mean, when you're thinking about how wrestling generally works, right?
Right.
How she gets under Jade's skin is to make her lose. But when you have a wrestler that can't lose, yeah, it's yeah, it's weird. And in this situation, it felt weird. It felt like, yep, it's like, okay, she should lose. You know,
yeah.
I mean, that's the way it's like, she should lose and she can't lose. So it's like, what do you do here? What do you do with this? Because, you know.
Yeah, like, what can you do? Yeah, exactly.
You got a person that can't lose. So it's like, it is what it is. I mean, it's the story. It's the streak. It's the streak storyline. That's what it's gonna be, you know. And it's, and I mean, that's how it's gonna roll forever. I mean, as far as until she loses a match. So it's kind of like, I want to be mad. I can't really be mad. You know what I mean? Because it's like, what do you do with this? I mean, I feel like they're in a rock and a hard place, kind of.
Right, yeah, there's not much you can do, at least right now. There's really not much. But we finished off the show with the TNT Championship match between Samoa Joe and Darby Allin. Nick Wayne was ringside, and Joe proceeded to grab him and try to just fucking goozle him and just rip him apart. Darby then proceeds to just throw himself through the bottom rope and into Joe. Then he starts beating him up with the skateboard because the match didn't start. Darby brings out a ladder, jumps off of it and fucking swantons and like literally fucking lands on him. His leg though proceeds to kind of buckle when he lands, so he's dealing with a bum leg. Eventually though, Joe proceeds to just spike Darby Allin on the steps, and he's holding him the entire time, choking him out, ripping him apart. But eventually though, Darby's able to just keep fighting and fighting and fighting, and he proceeds to, while he pushes gets pushed into the corner, he rips off the turnbuckle pad. On Joe rips off the turnbuckle pad while this happens, and while it happens, he goes for a stunner. Joe chokes him out again. Darby then throws Joe into the turnbuckle, hits a beautiful code red. That was so well done. And then two coffin drops, pins him. Darby Allin retains the TNT Championship, regains it for the second time in his hometown. And huge, huge moment. Sting comes out and celebrates with him. And I'm happy for it, honestly. I think Joe having the two belts for a little bit was kind of cool. But I think Darby having the TNT Championship, I think it does mean something when Darby has it. He's been one of their best champions, in my personal opinion. And I'm all for Darby getting another belt. He's still one of my favorite guys on the roster. And it was a great moment to close out this first episode of Dynamite of the New Year.
Absolutely. Y'all know Darby's my favorite singles wrestler. So I was sitting over there like, come on, come on, come on, come on, come on. And he did it. He pulled it out, hit that second coffin drop. And I was just like, after the match, you know, I was like kind of trepidatious of what he was winning. And then I forgot that this is AEW. Of course he was winning the title in Seattle on the last match of their new generation. On their establishing their new era, of course, the champion of the channel would need to be a person representing this new era, and who represents it more than Darby Allin?
Absolutely.
And then the moment with Sting coming out to hug him, it was just a great moment. It was just a feel good moment in Seattle after the show. He's like telling everybody to live their dreams. People are going to tell you you can't do it. You know, do it anyway. And it was such a, like, it was so sugary sweet. Like, dude, like, I got a toothache. That's how sugary sweet this was. It was amazing.
It was great. But that was AEW Dynamite. We'll quickly go through Rampage and Battle of the Belts. The Rampage matches, I thought were, like, you had the great tag team match, I think, between Danielson and Moxley versus Dante and Darius with Top Flight. They did really, really good work in that match, I will say. That was my favorite part of Rampage. And the rest were okay, I thought. Okay. I like the fact that the House of Black is doing stuff with Eddie Kingston, of all people. I love that. Like, House of Black trying to get Eddie Kingston, it's like one of those things. It's like a character you would not expect in a storyline like this, in a storyline like this. And I love that, honestly. Like, I want Eddie, first of all, more on Dynamite more. And then I want to get a little bit of a bigger spotlight on this storyline, because I think Eddie can do some amazing promos in regards to this. And I think they could really pick at the mental of Eddie Kingston's, like, fragile mind state. But everything else, that we got the
Eddie doesn't trust people, and exactly. That's what they're playing on, is that
I know
they're making him his best friend, you know, what does he call him? Forget what he calls him.
Ortiz?
No, he just never calls
Monkey.
Him.
No, Monkey.
Yeah, Monkey. I was about to say, he never calls him Ortiz. Like, I've seen them in person, and he still calls him Monkey. And so it's like, these dudes, like this one person that he thought he could trust, and he's saying, can you trust him? Like, can you really trust him? So I think that was, like, really cool. I think
I think
doing it that way is really cool, and I'm looking forward to where it goes, because Eddie is not the, you know, super, like, he don't want to talk a lot. He wants to fight. So when they're doing the lights out and the mystical stuff, it's going to be funny. Eddie completely no-selling it and saying it's stupid, and just, like, I think that's going to be an added aspect to all of this. Is that he won't sell any of that. He's not going to pretend like he's scared or anything like that. He's going to be like, this is dumb. Let's fight.
Right. No, I'm so excited for it. We had Moxley confirm that he would be ready for Mox. Hangman confirming he would be ready for Moxley on Dynamite. We had Jamie and Britt beating up on the Renegade sisters, Charlotte and Robin Renegade. We then also had Preston Vance beating up on Sonico. And then Darby Allin had an open challenge against the Kingdom's Mike Bennett. I gotta be honest, bro. Like, when the Kingdom appears on my television screen, I could give two shits. I don't care about the Kingdom. I don't. I've watched them before in Ring of Honor. I don't. Matt Taven does nothing for me at all. Mike and Maria, cute couple. I like Maria. I don't care about the Kingdom, any iterations of it. It's just like it. I was just like, oh Jesus Christ. Why does it have to be them? Darby got the win, of course. But that was Rampage. The highlights for me for Rampage was the House of Black and Eddie segment, and then the opening match with Danielson and Moxley against Top Flight. They did a hell of a job in that match, I would say.
I like the Kingdom. I like Matt Taven. I like him as more of the over-the-top heel. He's kind of playing an understated version of himself right now. And that's not, you know, I want him to be Matt Taven. I want him to be, like, all the way Matt Taven. And I just feel like he's not all the way Matt Taven right now. So
right.
I'm looking forward to see if they're going to ever pull that trigger on, you know, old Hell Taven. Because, I think he's very entertaining as a heel. You know, like, if you ever wanted to build him up to fight Darby, I I'm all in on that. Because, I'm like, he can lose, of course, but he's just that kind of despicable person. He is the antithesis of what Darby is. But yeah, I dig it. I think Mike Bennett is Mike Bennett's DK Metcalf, you know, or someone like that. It's like, it's DK Metcalf if he couldn't play. He looks like he should be a star, right? He's good looking, got a physique, got the very attractive woman next to him. Honestly, when he's out there, I could not give a crap about Mike Bennett.
Well, and DK Metcalf's out here like fucking pushing people and being the most arrogant fuck on the field in that Seahawks game.
It's like you look up from the 300s down and you see DK Metcalf. You're like, oh God, he's the best player on the football field, right? And he's not. He's really good, but he's not the best player on the football field. But he looks like he should be the best player. And that's kind of how he is with Mike Bennett. His physique is together. Everything's there. He can actually wrestle. I just don't care about him. Like, at all. I want to. But we just don't. Yeah, I just don't. I root for Mike Bennett. Like, I follow him on Twitter. One of my favorite Twitter followers. He's so motivational. He's raw. He'll let you in on who he is as a person and the struggles he goes through. That's all amazing. I just don't want to see you wrestle.
Right.
Which is, unfortunately, your profession.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so I'm sorry. I feel bad because I don't dislike the man. And it sounds like I'm burying him. It's just I don't care.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But we then had Battle of the Belts 5. Got to be honest, it didn't have me fully sold with the fact that we were seeing Acclaimed and Jeff Jarrett and Jay Lethal again. The no holds barred style of it, you know, I thought was at least a different way that they could go with it. And they did as much as they could, I felt like. There was a great moment where Jay Lethal had a figure four on Anthony Bowens and he rolled all the way down and they just went back and forth as they were going down the ring. I thought that was awesome. I thought that was a lot of fun.
Dude, and the angle slam, and then he does the fake thing like he's pulling down and then he puts in an ankle lock. That popped me.
That was
so
good.
Hard.
That was really, really
good.
Oh
my God, that was so great.
Yeah, but eventually, though, Jeff Jarrett tries to get the guitar. Billy Gunn pulls it away, and he hits Satnam Singh with the guitar. He doesn't even flinch and just goes ahead and tries to double choke slam the Acclaimed. He then also double choke slams the referee. Jay Lethal and them, the lethal injection is hit. Aubrey Edwards runs in, shoves Sanjay Dutt out of the way, and then Anthony Bowens hits Lethal with the arrival. And then Max Caster hits the mic drop. They retain the titles. It was a lot of craziness in this match. I'm quite done with this feud. But regardless, this was a nice little match, I felt like. And even though I wasn't like super stoked about it, the stuff that he did in the no holds barred standing was entertaining and unique, and I liked it.
Absolutely. It was amazing. I really, yeah. I thought, like, Jeff Jarrett, when he debuted and I found out he was going to wrestle, I rolled my eyes harder than anybody could possibly roll their eyes.
Right.
He has not only flipped me, he's flipped the fans. They actually care that he's there. And I didn't think that was possible. And that's just somebody that's been doing this for 30 years. You know what I mean? He knows how to entertain. It's just flat out. He knows how to entertain. It's like, mm-hmm. when you think you couldn't care less about Jeff Jarrett, give him 10 minutes. He will make you care about him.
Right. No, for sure. For sure. We then moved on and we got Jade Cargill facing off against Sky Blue. This I did like. I thought this match was good. Sky Blue looked I'm starting every time I see Sky Blue, I like her more and more. And I thought they did a lot of good stuff in this match. There was a moment where Red Velvet was walking towards the ring and Layla Gray confronts her and then she slaps Layla and then it kind of distracts Jade for a little bit. Jade nearly gets hit with a Hurricanrana, but she counters and hits Jaded to win. Sky Blue, I thought, looked well. And this is one of the better Jade matches, I felt like. I thought this was a good women's match for Battle of the Belts.
That ending sequence.
Yeah.
Dude, that was like I don't know who came up with that, but it was such an amazing transition and a move. It was like it showed everything that when Jade is great,
yes.
she's phenomenal. She's on a different level than everybody else. So it just felt like that was like the one of those moments that you'll talk about is like, man, it's like, oh, she caught the Hurricanrana, put her up on her shoulder, got her down, put it, it's like, boom. And it's like, yeah, that was pretty cool. And it was like hard. It was like rehearsed and you know, they had practiced it or whatever, But it didn't seem like it. In the moment, it seemed like a natural transition into that move. Just a naturally, overly, freakishly athletic transition into the move.
Right.
So, yeah. Shout out to, I mean, Jade's on another level. I mean, come on. It's like, she's Jade. It's like, I don't know. Like, I run out of adjectives when yes. talking about her. Because she is just phenomenal at, you know, like, just the whole character. She's a superhero come to life.
She is. The physique,
everything. It's like, when people's like, oh, I'm tired of Jade. I'm like, build no. somebody up to beat her.
Yeah, exactly. You
build somebody up to beat her. That's what wrestling is. No one right now is over enough to beat Jade.
No.
Like, even Willow, who I, you know, Willow, Sheeta are like my top two to beat Jade, right? Those are the two people I want to beat Jade.
Yeah.
But at this point in time, neither one of them are hot enough to beat Jade.
Unfortunately, no.
You have to start them on a streak. You have to start building someone. We as wrestling fans should kind of be seeing who's going to beat Jade. And right now we don't. Mm-hmm. And that's when a streak starts to get stale and people start to hate it. And what it starts turning people on your person is when you just like when Goldberg was going through a streak, he was unstoppable, but he'd have problems with DDP. He'd have problems with Sting. You know what I mean? He'd have
right, no.
problems with a certain amount of people that you're like, well, this person can beat them, right? But Jay right. just kind of beats everybody. And, you know, like I said, I don't want the fans to turn over because I love Jade. So they need to start doing something. Start painting that picture that everybody can see of who's going to beat Jade.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think we'll get to that point at some point. We finished off Battle of the Belts with the All-Atlantic Championship between Orange Cassidy and Kip Sabian. Such a good match. There was a point when Danhausen comes out and he launches a curse at Kip Sabian, and that's when Orange comes in and hits a tope suicida and then a diving crossbody, which Jericho was screaming, "The curse worked!" We then also had... it was interesting. We had Butcher, Blade, and the Bunny actually in there. Bunny got ejected after grabbing Orange's foot. And then while that happened, Butcher and Blade walked out. But Danhausen tried to fight him off. Poor bastard didn't stand a chance. They then took some chairs and sat at ringside during the match. And they were just – Kip and Orange were doing great work against each other. I'm glad Kip got this huge spot. I think him being on Battle of the Belts I thought was really nice. Eventually, Kip is able to hit a corkscrew brainbuster, and then he hits the orange punch on Orange Cassidy, which I thought was funny, and it nearly worked for him until DDT beach break almost pinned him there, and then double orange punches that would pin Kip Sabian. Orange Cassidy retains the All Atlantic Championship. A really good way to close out Battle of the Belts. One of the more solid ones, I thought. It's hard for me to compare the Battle of the Belts to each other, but it was a really solid one, I felt like. And I liked Kip getting that kind of spot. I thought it was a good fit for him.
I like Kip. I don't love Kip. I like Kip. Kip, personally, as far as meeting him around the things, awesome dude. But as far as that, he wasn't ready for this. It was a great spot, and... Yeah, and maybe later down the line when they build him up a little bit more, I was just like, because in my mind I was like, man, this is the kind of the second time he's kind of went at them. I was like, maybe he wins this time, and I was like, I wouldn't, you know, like you had the belt on Pac, one of the better wrestlers in the world,
right?
Cassidy, one of your hottest acts. The moment you put it on Kip, and forgive me, Alex, if you hear this. It then becomes a lower mid-card title.
Mm.
Right now, it's not a lower mid-card title because it's literally on one of your hottest acts, and it was right. one of your better wrestlers before. But as soon as you put it on Kip, the level of person that can hold this belt drops
because mm-hmm.
you haven't – Kip's not over.
You yeah, know? Unfortunately, no.
No, Kip is popular to some people, but he's not over to the point right. where – people are like, I need Kip to win a title. I mean, he has his little fan base, but it's not loud enough. And they haven't built him up as enough of a heel to win this title match. And, you know, it would be one of those times where you're taking the belt and trying to make the person instead of, you know,
right.
You're ready for the title. So I'm like, I think Kip is getting there. He needs to stay healthy, build up some wins on Dark and Elevation, do some really, really heel shit. Next time, they might have him built up enough to win the belt.
Gotcha. Well, that's going to do it for Battle of the Belts and Rampage. We're going to real quickly do a preview of the Kia Forum Dynamite in LA, which looks
It's good. Basically a pay-per-view.
It's basically a pay-per-view, yeah.
Yes, it's like it's a two-hour with commercial pay-per-view.
Yes. Bryan Danielson versus Konosuke Tatashita.
Pay-per-view match.
Yes. The Firm facing with Big Bill and Lee Moriarty facing off against not Lee Moriarty, Lee Johnson.
No, it's Lee Moriarty.
It is? Okay, yeah. Sorry, my bad. Big Bill and Lee Moriarty facing Jungle Hook.
First time ever.
First time ever, so yeah.
Pay-per-view match.
We're going to hear from the JAS, John Moxley versus Hangman.
Legitimate pay-per-view main event right there.
Yeah, literally.
Like, that could be a Full Gear Revolution main event right there.
Yep, Britt Baker and Jamie Hayter, the Killer and the Pillar versus Saraya and Tony Storm.
And with that looming cloud of is Mercedes going to show up or not? Unfortunately, AEW, shout out to you. You did the thing. You did the thing I told you to do. If it's not going to be Mercedes, you needed to announce who it was going to be last week.
Exactly. And they did.
If Mercedes doesn't show up tomorrow, I don't want to hear shit. No one
can complain about it because it's like if it would have been bad.
No one told you Mercedes was coming.
Yes.
The only reference, kinda, is when Britt said, "I'm the boss" in her interview last week.
Exactly. That was it.
That was it. No one says Mercedes is coming. So, I mean, I personally think she's going to be on the show. I do. I think she's going to be on the show. But no one promised you shit. So, right. If your fantasy booking gets you pissed off, you need to take that up with yourself, not TK.
Right. For sure.
Yeah. And then game 7. I mean, as much as I am the odd man out of saying, you know, I'm kind of tired of watching them wrestle, I'm pretty much as excited about Game 7 as I was about the Dog Collar match.
And there it is. Yep. Elite versus Death Triangle Game 7. Winner go home.
They're going to leave it out there.
They will.
They're going to try to kill each other. And it's a ladder, and you're going to have tables, and you're going to have chairs, and you're probably going to have thumbtacks, and you're probably going to have Brandon Cutler involved, and you're probably going to have Alex Abrahantes involved, and everybody's probably going to bleed. And this is the Bucks doing this on their home court. You know what I mean? I know it's like Rancho Cucamonga and LA are probably far from each other, but in general, it's like this is their home area.
Oh, yeah.
They're going to leave it out there. The Lucha Bros, they have a store in that Los Angeles.
They do.
So this is like their home area, right? So them dudes are going to try to kill each other, and I just hope they don't die. That's really my only concern, that they might do it too well.
That is very true, dude. That is very true.
Yeah, it's. I mean, Kenny Will Ospreay, I don't think is going to be touched this year. Do I think someone maybe could? Yes, Kenny and Will Ospreay if they wrestle again. That's who I think can touch Kenny and Will Ospreay.
Mm-hmm.
But trios or tag team match of the year?
Yeah.
The Lucha Bros might lock this up tomorrow. Later today if you're listening to this. They might lock it up.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
They're going to do some shit. They're going to make you remember it, and they're going to make it feel different than the other 6 matches.
No question. I could not be more excited for that. And also, too, it'll be exciting because then the Elite can do other shit, I would say. I'm excited for that as well.
Dude. I have this dream scenario that is unlikely. The 3 men, after this match is over and the Elite are celebrating, 3 men, one that loves Pepsi a lot, coming down to the ring and beating the shit out of the Elite. That would be my ultimate dream. I don't know. I don't think it'll happen. If it does, I swear to you, Tony Khan replaces The Rock as my favorite human. Okay? If it happens, Tony Khan replaces The Rock as my favorite human. Period.
All I will say is that I've completed my AEW Punk collection of figures.
I just recently got the main unrivaled one, the one with the Larry jacket. So there was only four, correct? I got them all.
Yes. I got the it's so funny you bring that up. I got the ice cream bar today.
Oh, you just got that one. Nice. Yes.
Yeah, I got the ice cream bar
it's
today.
It's so good. It's yeah, such a good one.
Yeah, so but yeah, I'm just like I said.
Oh, by the way, did you know that was the top seller on Ringside Collectibles? Because Punk made sure you knew on his Instagram story. Yes. He made sure you knew how much. He's like, yo, fuckers, I still draw money. Make me happy.
So there's this guy named Dax Harwood. You may have heard of him. With this show called FTR with Dax. And apparently, rumors and innuendo. I don't know how true any of this is. I like to keep it to rumors and innuendo. Is that he called a bit of a tiff. He caused a bit of a tiff.
Yeah.
Talking about that he hopes the Young Bucks... And Young Bucks, Kenny Omega, and Punk could work this out. And, you know, and it's like, yeah, I could see how that could be a problem. Especially if you're on the side of there's no way in fucking hell this is going to work out. And I just want people to forget that it may happen. Oh, yeah. Yep. You don't want one of your stars, like, literally teasing, in essence, that it's going to happen. You know?
Mm-hmm.
As much as... It wasn't official, much as it wasn't promised, as much as he was literally just begging people to get along. Everyone's going to take that as, oh, Punk's coming back. Because I saw it.
Everyone was going nuts.
Oh, Punk's coming back because Dax brought him up on his own personal podcast. Okay. And I get it. I get it why I could cause some strife. Yeah. I mean, because I want it to be repairable, right?
Same.
I want them to be able to put their sides together and make money. But I have people in my life that have wronged me that maybe I've forgiven doesn't mean I want to work with anymore. And it might be there with these people.
I believe it's probably the case, yeah.
I hope it's not. Like, with all of my heart. But it's probably there in this case.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So... I'm just saying, like, I hope it works out. And like I said, I make sure you are listening to FTR with Dax. It's a very entertaining show. And sometimes he says shit he's not supposed to, which is the best. It is the best.
Yep.
Like, you know. So, yeah, sometimes he just says shit. And it's great. And that's what's amazing about it. And, you know, it's like, that's why I like the show. It's like, I like the shows where you feel like you're talking to the person, not the character.
Yeah, no, he's 100% like himself, and it makes for a really entertaining show.
Yes,
because sure.
Himself is a person that sometimes doesn't know when to shut up.
That is absolutely true.
And I love him for it. I love him for it, and it's amazing. I love him for it because I am a person that sometimes doesn't know when to shut up.
Yep.
So no, you know, I've said the wrong thing. I've said the wrong thing in life way more than I've said the right thing. So
no, yeah, for sure.
I completely understand him. So but TK somehow pulls this rabbit out of his hat. You know, miracle.
Cry again, dude. I'll cry for a second time in less than 2 years.
I will cry, and I mean, like literally, loyalty AEW. All my shit's gonna be AEW from now on. I'm like, I have a lot of it now, but I'm just like going to completely forsake everything else.
Mom's going to be so mad because I'll be buying more shit. Because I was like, look, I was just getting all of his shit once it goes off of shop just to be like, look, I got everything out of his run that I could. And then once if he comes back, then I'm going to be like, well, it's just more shit for me. And then she's going to be like, great.
Dude, the All Elite crate is awesome because it has an FTR shirt in it.
Dude, that shirt's awesome. Cindy, I saw it. Cindy's got it, and it looks great.
Dude, I am.
I just stole... Cindy had the dog collar CM Punk shirt. I stole it from her because she hasn't worn it. She hasn't worn it at all, and it's like one size a little smaller than me, but I can still fit. I still fit into smalls. Like I wear a medium, but I still fit into smalls.
Yeah, I cannot fit into smalls. Not at all. not even a little bit. I haven't worn small.
You will be able to once you fit. When we keep running.
I haven't worn small since I was 9.
Just got to keep running.
I was like, I was always a big boy. You know, I was husky, and then I was chunky. And then, yeah, I went through the gambit, and now I'm just fat, and I'm cool with that for right now. For right now, I yeah. plan on changing that. So
the running is going to help a lot yeah, for yeah, sure. Dude, but,
yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, but that is everything that we have for the preview of Dynamite. Now, there's one last thing we have to get to. As we've been recording it, wrestling Twitter has been exploding. And, Floyd, do you want to explain why it's been exploding as of late?
So, Casshole. What's this? Cassidy Haynes? Is his name?
I believe so.
So I kept hearing news and news and news that, you know, this stuff might be coming out. Something big was coming. Even to the point where I was on the phone with someone and someone shared a fake account, and I accidentally like shared it with two of my friends because I was distracted, so I wasn't really paying attention. Then the real one came out. Cassidy Haynes. This is the only one that this was the first one to flat out say it.
Yep.
That, for what it's worth, I'm told the Saudi deal is done and they're taking the company private. That is in WWE is being bought by Saudi investment funds, and then they're going to basically do a stock buyback and take the company public. And
private, you mean?
You know, private. And yeah, people have lost their shit. Like, people were reacting as if WWE had let a press release out saying this is going to happen. Now, did the reports come from a few places? Yes. But the big names have all said they can't confirm it, right? But, yeah. So, right now, if you believe the speculation, WWE, with Vince as the executive chairman, are going to sell their company and then to the Saudis, who, you know, then I don't know if the stock buyback is worked in the sale. I don't know. I, unlike everybody on Twitter, am not a business expert, so I don't know how this works. I realize there's a lot of people with MBAs on Twitter tonight. I learned that. I mean, you know, so I saw that these people with MBAs, I don't know how the stock buyback and the purchase works. I'm imagining that's all in one, right? So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it looks like it's going to be owned by this Saudi company, a.k.a. the Saudi government.
Yeah.
But, yeah, and people are like, well, there goes women's wrestling. Sami Zayn's going to quit. And it's just like, it's fun. I am not going to say it's not fun.
Yeah, well, this man loves the drama. This man loves the chaos. And the chaos for sure is, like, bro, it's like, I literally made a joke. I'm like, Vince McMahon is 0%ing speed running how quickly he can kill this company.
Yes.
And it's fun to watch. That being said, I also made the joke that when is El Generico going to be all elite? I will say too, this will be the last thing I say on it. I want all wrestling to be good. This does a bit kind of scare me a bit for the future of wrestling, at least in a massive sense. But again, I don't know even I don't know like what this even entails for the most part. So unless I'm waiting for an official response, which they're going to have to put out something official because shit is gone crazy right now. Like to the point, like a statement has to come out to either be like, this isn't happening or let us explain. Like one of those two things has to happen because people are speculating constantly and it's getting bad.
Well, I see it as two ways. Let's just say it's 100% true. I will tell you for the layman that doesn't watch wrestling, probably very little will change. Because, as I was telling Austin before we got on there, very rarely do companies pay billions of dollars to run companies in the ground. Their goal is to make money. You know, their goal is to keep making money. So the WWE machine at this point makes money. So they're probably going to be like, keep doing what you're doing. Right? Or it's the other thing. And it's... I'm a conspiracy theorist. Like I said, I love to live in the muck. WWE leaked this to drive up the price, which probably is the simplest solution. They leaked it to drive up the price for one of these other companies to buy it.
And so,
like I said, that seems like the simplest solution to me is because, you know, maybe it didn't seem like, maybe it wasn't as hot as everybody thought it was. And it's right. Like, oh, yeah, we got to drive up interest. Yeah, the Saudi government wants to buy us and go private. Hell yeah, $7 billion. Because they're trying to get somebody to say 7.5. Because
there you go.
That's the point of business, is to make as much money as possible. Stephanie McMahon did step down as co-CEO. So mm-hmm. Nick Khan is the sole CEO of WWE.
And then Vince is back on the board of directors.
Yeah, he's the executive chairman. Yeah, but yeah, shout out to Stephanie. She's always been, I don't know her personally, but she's always been one of my favorite characters, most well-represented McMahons. She's always seemed cool. You know, when wrestlers talk about her, they talk about how nice she is and how down to earth. And apparently the overall morale in the WWE was better because, you know, she was running it. Her and Triple H were running it. So I hope that continues. I doubt it, but I hope that continues because I love a lot of the wrestlers that work for the WWE. That goes without saying. I mean, I hope that's obvious if you know how much I love wrestling. Like, I love the people in the WWE, KOs and the Bloodline and Sammy. And I mean, like, by naming some, I'm going to leave some off. But I love the people in the WWE. They've been entertaining me for years. So I want them to have the best life possible. So whatever that means going forward, I hope they get it. You know what I mean? I hope they get it and it resolves off best for them, because that's who my thought process is with. It's always going to be the wrestlers, because to me, as far as a fan, I doubt how I view the product changes all that much.
Yeah. Well, there you go. And again, we'll see what happens as more comes out. But regardless, that is going to do it for us, I think, on this episode of All Things Elite. Thank you guys so much for tuning in every single week. We really appreciate you. Be sure to continue to download this fine show on Google or Apple Podcasts. And if you listen to us on Spotify or wherever you choose to listen to us, please give us a share with your friends, family, coworkers, whoever you wish. And the easiest way for you guys to support us is following us on social media. We are at AT Elite Pod. At Social Suplex are the guys that make this show possible. So please check out all the other shows they have on their network. I am at Austin Sumowicz, S-Z-U-M-O-W-I-C-Z. And Floyd is at Floyd Johnson Jr. on Twitter. I will now let you go to Floyd. His Kansas City Chiefs will be in the NFL playoffs, and I will be eagerly seeing what they do. My Detroit Lions are not in the playoffs, but they killed Aaron Rodgers and the Packers, and they finished with a winning record after starting 1-6. I am so happy and excited for my team. Dan Campbell should be coach of the year. And I will pass it off to Floyd to close us out on this episode of All Things Elite.
Shout out to my Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs. I wish you the best going forward. Congratulations. Big old congratulations to the Georgia Bulldogs for winning the national title in monumentally impressive fashion. Something you might not know if you listen to the show, you can buy a Georgia Bulldogs WWE title. Like, literally, go to Fanatics, and it's $499.99 for a Georgia Bulldogs WWE title. They apparently have every team in the SEC, which is so weird and just makes me hate the SEC more.
Yeah, where the hell is the Big Ten belts?
That's what I said. I was like, where the hell is the ACC belts? But no, I just, hey, man, we're New Year. Some people are like, new year, new me. If that's you and you think you need to be a new you, go ahead and be a new you. If you're already awesome, just stay awesome. You know, that's it. Just stay awesome. Me, I am trying to increase my awesomeness by a few levels by losing some of me. So my hugs won't be as cuddly, hopefully, going on in the future. But yeah, I wish you all the best on your New Year's resolutions if you choose to do that. If you just have thoughts of ways to get better, I wish you the best on that. And like I said, if you're already awesome, just stay that way. I want you to know, I'm rooting for you. Love you all. Have a happy New Year. And I will leave you how we always leave you. Whether it is home, work, or school, always do your best to be elite.